You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 292. Welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White. I am recording for you here in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on tonight's program, out of Philadelphia, Mr. John Gentile.
Adam White, always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
It always should be. And out of Los Angeles, California.
Yes.
A city that has a population of several people, I assume.
Too many.
But all of them clean, upstanding, you know. Salt of the earth. I don't know why I'm making fun of LA. I've never actually been there. Ricky Frankel, hi.
It's okay to do that. It feels a joke.
Like, it feels like I should be harping on LA for some reason. It's probably because you have like sun and record stores and, you know, pending death by the earth and sea. It's just, you know.
Yeah, I'm not one of those people, and I don't think a lot of people are, where like they're like proud to be from LA, and like they get insulted if you start talking about like the East Coast and the West Coast. I think just LA is sort of a joke, and I've heard people say that California is just a joke of a state.
Why do you hate LA so much, Ricky?
I don't hate LA. I like it here. I just don't defend it.
I'll defend the Bay Area, man. For all its faults, the Bay Area is a wonderful place.
Bay Area has a lot of faults. I spent 4 years up there, and I loved it.
Best music scene in the world. A lot of good-looking girls, a lot of good-looking guys, if that's your thing. A lot of stuck-up people, but a lot of cool people, too. Bay Area is great, man. And there's always something going on. Like, New York is supposed to be the city that never sleeps, and that's probably true. But in San Francisco, the Bay Area, there's always something going on, and it's always let me tell you, I'm not going to drone on and on about this, but if you're looking for, like, a first, second, and third date to take somebody out on, the Bay Area is your place, because there's always something interesting to do. And if you're taking somebody new out on a date, unless you're a Don Juan, which I'm not a Don Juan, but if you actually have to work for your dates, then the Bay Area is the place to be, because you take a girl or a guy or whatever you're into to an interesting place, and you will have a good time for the mere factor that you're at an interesting place with interesting things going on. Bay Area, the lover's city, what can I say?
Nothing like a first date at 924 Gilman.
See, I won't ever take a girl to a concert on a date, because like you don't really talk that much, you know, and
no.
Adam White, man, like what's your go-to place for a first date? I realize you haven't been on a first date in like 10 years, but...
10, Jesus Christ. I probably haven't been in a first date in like closer to, oh my God, it's probably like closer to 20 than it is to 10. I don't know. I was like, what, like 15 or 16? I don't know what we would have done. We went to the movies. Honestly, I think that, okay, my now wife and I, our first date, we went to see The Sixth Sense in theaters. So whenever that came out.
I guess you guys rode your brontosauruses there, right?
Yeah.
Oh,
when was that? When
like
did that
97 or something? Good movie, though.
Is someone looking this up? Because I'm not.
Is your wife into sci-fi? I'm That's a good movie.
We were into being 15 or whatever.
Sixth Sense? Wait, Sixth Sense. That's Bruce Willis.
1999.
Okay. So that's haven't done one since then, so couldn't tell you. Speaking of first dates, if you want to date with any of the Punk News podcast hosts, you could email podcast@punknews.org. I don't know if you'll get one, but you might, depending on who you address it to and if you're nice. We do have an email. Do we want to touch your email to this?
You can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. And Nathaniel wrote us a very long, very thought out response. And I'm going to read the whole thing. And this looks like it's addressed to Ricky mainly, but also to you, Adam White, secondarily.
Oh, what'd I do?
I've been a reader for about a decade, but I didn't start listening to the podcast until a few months ago when I started my new job trimming marijuana for the Oregon legal market. I absolutely love the show, so please keep up the good work. I wanted to chime in on a couple of things for episode 290, Thanks Meth. First, congrats to Ricky on his gloss demo 7-inch. I purchased one myself last month when I went on a last-minute road trip to Gloss's hometown of Olympia, Washington, to see them play an all-ages show in a little storefront. The show was incredible. The opening act was Priest from DC, this is John Gentile speaking. I've seen Priest, very cool band. I'd never heard them, but they were so impressive. I bought their album Bodies and Control and Money and Power on 12-inch, having never heard it, and it's great. Gloss had more energy during their set than I've seen at an all-ages show in a long time. The PA speakers were in serious danger of having their stands kicked over, but someone always managed to catch them. I think Gloss is one of the most intense and relevant hardcore bands making music today. Secondly, on the subject of artists like Gwen Stefani and Brian Fallon, who once made music associated with punk but have long since moved on to more mainstream pastures, personally, I scroll right past those stories when I see them on punk news. As you guys accurately pointed out on the podcast, larger mainstream media outlets already cover these artists like crazy. As much as I still dig early AFI, I am simply uninterested in hearing about whatever Davey Havok is up to in 2016. Thanks for all your efforts for the punk community and keeping the punk community alive, informed, and connected. Sincerely yours, and Nathaniel. And P.S., I have lost the ability to say the word black correctly. My wife and co-workers can't figure out why I keep pronouncing it blah and hysterically laughing to myself. And that's from Nathaniel. So, Nathaniel, thank you for writing in.
Yeah, thank you. I love that 7-inch. I am insanely jealous that you got to see Gloss. I have yet to see them. They're on my list, though. Very cool.
Davey Havok is probably just painting his house black or whatever else were his lyrics to the song Mattersville by NoFX. I think I pretty much agree on the matter of do we cover some of these non-punk people, if for no other reason that I find it kind of boring to have to field those stories when they come to me. And you know, a lot of the times I would rather not. So if we can have that slack picked up by you know, Rolling Stone and the like, then I'm entirely okay with that.
It's nice that Rolling Stone's picking up our slack.
Yeah. They're Rolling Stone. They're sitting down. They're having their meeting. They're going, what are we going to cover right now? And they go, well, punk news isn't talking about Gwen Stefani at all. And I'm like, shit, give her the cover. That's how it works. That's how I understand real journalism and real magazines and people who get paid for this work is they look at punk news and then they do or don't do what we do, depending on the kind
of stuff. That's actually just disturbingly accurate for a lot of publications, to tell you the truth.
Well, I just drew a Venn diagram that included everything, so it has to be accurate.
True.
Yeah, right? It couldn't not be. Wow, thanks for that letter. That's great. I'm always surprised to hear when people have started listening to the show recently, only because, I mean, I see our listener numbers, so, and they're fairly stable, which is good in that they don't go down, but they don't dramatically go up, which either means that we have, like, a pretty even attrition to new person thing happening, or... And this was my my worry, was that 3 years ago we got subscribed in a bunch of people's iTunes and all those people are dead, but their computers are still running. So they're still downloading episodes, but no one's actually there. So it's cool to hear that there's someone actually has gone and started listening to the show recently. That's good to hear. I like that. We're going to talk about records because the three of us are on the show. However, I'm going to put a pin in this and say, if you guys want to talk about some records you picked up in the last weeks or so, that's cool. But we're mostly going to talk about Record Store Day here because I think that's the more relevant thing than which amazing 7-inch, you know, Ricky has that I don't. So
there are second pressings on Discogs now that I keep getting emails about. If you want it,
there you go. There. So Ricky, you have anything interesting you picked up you want to flaunt?
You know, I was going to say this for one of the stories, but I did get my Mean Jeans Night Vision 7-inch on yellow vinyl. That one I got. Let me see here. I also got my Dwarves Svetlana's split 7-inch. I recently went to a record release show for a band called Murderland, and I'll probably be talking about that when I play my song later. But I picked up their album Splitsville on, like, it's like clear with a blue swirl vinyl kind of thing. It's really cool. And that's it. Also, I got my I forgot to mention last time, I got my New Noise magazine Falcon Flexi on white flexi vinyl, which is cool. And I'm really looking forward to that Falcon album. That's about it though.
I've not heard anything from that Falcon record yet, and there's it's so no good. Reason why I haven't, except that I keep forgetting to check it out. So
it's so far the songs that they have released are really fucking good.
If someone that listens to this show can like send me a tweet in like, I don't know, 2 days after you hear this and tell me to go check out that Falcon song, that'd be good.
I'll do it.
Oh, no, I want to use our listeners as a personal task scheduling system, so I can just feed off things, and eventually someone will pop up and remind me of the thing that I'm only remembering now that I'm on the show. So that's what I would like. John, you got any amazing records, or should we talk about
the day? No, let's talk about the day, the big day.
All right, so the list of releases for Record Store Day 2016 have been posted. There's a whole bunch of artists. You can find the list over at recordstoreday.com. I assume both of you have seen this. Oh, Record Store Day, by the way, takes place on April 16th of 2016. I assume both you guys have taken a look at this list, and you have a few things to say about some of the items on there. You know, let's talk about some of the things that are on there. As a public service announcement, as a member of the punk rock Illuminati here, I do have the specific details of what the Sex Pistols, Clash, Buzzcocks, and Ramones releases are. So I know what those are, and I will mention them during this thing. Not that I'm necessarily looking forward to any of those, but just I have it here. But you know, I'll get to that. John, did you take a look at this list? Like what?
I did, and I honestly, I'm becoming a Record Store Day hater. I've got the same gripe that I've had the two previous years. They're not really issuing anything interesting. They're just doing reissues. I mean, they're reissuing, let's see here, a David Bowie album. I mean, you can get a David Bowie album anywhere. They have been doing a nice job with a David Bowie 7-inch reissues where they've put alternate and rare mixes on the B-side. I really want to get the Station to Station single. However, they're always like $18, man. It's like, I don't want to spend $18 for a 7-inch single. You know, the Gwar re-release, I'm really disappointed by that. And because last year, they released Gwar's America Must Be Destroyed album, and it was very expensive, and the idea was it was two records that play at 45 instead of 33, and they had like a pop-up graphic. So the idea is that it was a premium issue of one of Gwar's greatest albums. Well, when I got it, it was a major botch job. The labels were all messed up. Some of the labels were duplicated. Some were on the wrong side of the record. And three sides played at 45, but the fourth side played at 33. Plus, you could tell that the record itself had just been ripped from a CD. It sounded pretty bad. So it was really just a sloppy rush job that really didn't do the band justice, and it's just kind of a pointless token. They're re-releasing maybe their greatest record or maybe their second greatest record for Record Store Day, Scum Dogs of the Universe, and it's probably just going to be another junk job. You know, it's like, why am I spending money for this? They're re-releasing the Best of the Johnny Cash Show on LP. You can get that on CD for $4. There's no reason to do that in the LP, you know? They're re-releasing the Monkees albums. Like, no one needs anything. They're re-releasing the Old Dirty Bastard Brooklyn Zoo 12-inch single of Brooklyn Zoo. They're re-releasing the Jay Retards album, Blood Vision. But, like, that's an easy-to-get record. There's no reason to reissue that whatsoever.
I saw that, and they called it a 10th anniversary of Blood Visions, which, like, maybe it is, but what a weird...
Well, they're actually pulling a rope-a-dope, and here's why. They're saying, we're re-releasing it with a 7-inch with demo cuts. They released that demo of the 7-inch at the same time that they released the actual record. So they're just really putting two things together. Like, it's not even anything, like, new or special. It's kind of a rip-off, I hate to say. There's one thing on this whole list, and I hate to be a Record Store Day hater, but Record Store Day should fight to make me love it. I shouldn't have to fight to love Record Store Day, and they're not doing a great job. There's one thing that I'm interested in, and to me, this underscores what is interesting and worthwhile about Record Store Day, and that is they are re-releasing a Sublime record that almost nobody knows that it exists. It's called Sublime, Job Won't Pay the Bills, And what it is it's an early version of 40 Ounces to Freedom. It's about seven or eight songs. Those songs would be re-recorded for 40 Ounces to Freedom. And it's actually the first album that Sublime self-released and self-recorded and put out. Sometimes people call it a demo, but it's not technically a demo. They sold it as a cassette, as an official album in the earliest era. And on eBay, it goes for like $2,000. They're re-releasing it on cassette and LP. And to me, this is what Record Store Day is about, getting rare and unique recordings that you normally couldn't get into the mainstream because there's not high enough demand, but Record Store Day will make demand worth it, and that's what I'm interested in. Certainly not a re-release of the Ramones' Judy's a Punk on 7-inch. I've got that, you know.
So, I mean, I've read a few things about the stuff you talked about, Adam. The Judy is a Punk 7-inch thing, I think those are demos of that song, and I actually want that 7-inch.
So what that is it is a now no I mean you have to take the hyperbole out of the write up for this, so I don't know how true this is, but this is apparently a recently discovered 1975 lost demo alternative versions of Judy is a Punk straight from the original demo master tape. The story here is that Miriam Liana from like the Cramps and A-Bones left Ohio in 1975 in search of the Ramones and found them through working for the legendary record man Marty Thau. Just prior to Marty launching the groundbreaking Red Star Records label, he funded these first Ramones demos. 30 plus years, afterwards, the recordings were purchased by the Norton Records label. And anyways, so blah, blah, blah. Apparently they are rare early demo cuts of Judy's a Punk. Both the A and B side are demos of Judy's a Punk. So
actually,
that's interesting.
Adam, I hate to interrupt, but I understood that the press release you're talking about, but it's actually a lie. The demo that exact recording is on the Ramones debut remastered CD.
Ah, see, this is what I'm talking about, though. Like press release text, right? So you know, so on the one hand, it is not the version of Judy's a Punk that you're going to hear on the first Ramones record, but it's not necessarily rare. So, right. You know, that's where you have to do it. And I mean, the rest of these, there's two of these releases that are coming out here that to me just seem like the worst of the reissue for the sake of reissues. So there's a picture disc that they're pressing of Nevermind the Bollocks.
Which
is one of like the most, it has to be one of the most easily available things that you could go find on vinyl in a bin somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, like, my copy I pulled out of a flea market bin when I was a teenager. It's, you know, it's in pretty good condition and it sounds great. And I don't know why I'd want to go pay for that again because I already have it. The other thing, and this one, it's funny because, like, the name seems to be trying to hang a lampshade on the whole thing, but it's really true, is there is a collection of Buzzcocks recordings that they have called More Product in a Different Compilation, which, yeah, it basically, that's what it is. So it is the best of the Buzzcocks recordings for the United Artists Records on two LPs. So basically, it's Buzzcocks singles between 1977 and 1980, which is essentially most of the shit that you would have already had if you had a copy of Singles Going Steady. And you could just go get a copy of Singles Going Steady, again, in any flea market bin. So why do you need this one outside of the fact that it's orange, right? So there's things like that I think are really kind of taking the shine off of that. The third of the big classic punk releases here, I'm going to give a little bit more leeway to, because this is something I actually kind of want. So there was a Joe Strummer 12-inch single that they are releasing. It features some art that has never been seen before, I guess, by Joe Strummer and John Chews. I'm going to say Chews. I'm not familiar with the name. But anyways, this thing, so the side A is Gangsterville and Punk Rock Blues. Side B are Sleepwalk and Cholo Vest. So Gangsterville is an Earthquake Weather era song. This is one of these cases where I'm looking at this and saying, you know, I don't really have anything from that era of Joe that isn't on one of those like really horrible early CDs. Like, I'm pretty sure my copy of Earthquake Weather has that notice on the back that you know, we talked about that before, that like early CDs had, where they basically just like warned you that it sounded like crap. So, you know, this is a little bit more, I think, up my alley as far as like, okay, I'm not going to get this particular, you know, Joe Strummer set anywhere. So that I can deal with. But man, like the Buzzcocks thing, or like worse, the Pistols thing. Wow.
Yeah, that was. And I saw, actually, I watched. Do you guys know the Needle Drop on YouTube? It's Anthony Fantano. Yeah. Yeah, he did. He like talked about like what he wanted on the list, and they showed pictures of each one, and it just, and he talked about Nevermind the Bollocks, and it just looked bad. Even in that little thumbnail, it's not even the original yellow and pink. It's actually the pink and green version of the cover.
The American cover, yeah.
Is that the American cover?
That's the American cover. The yellow one was the UK one. But like, it is the that Pistols thing is just like the least amount of effort that you could put into this.
Oh yeah, I mean, and I look, when I'm doing this, I look for something special that just is not special. I mean, I have two copies of the album. I have one that I bought in a dollar bin when I was first started doing collecting records. Then my second copy is my French pressing from the 70s that I found a long time ago. That one's special. That'll probably be in a dollar bin in a year.
Yeah, and I mean, like, it's crazy how you can have appreciation for a certain piece of art, but the presentation of it completely turns you off. So, like, I do not in any way want a Nevermind the Bollocks 7-inch. At the same point, even though I own a copy of the record, if I was in a store and I came across a copy with the, like, the yellow UK cover, I would potentially buy that because I love that cover, right?
Yeah, so, that's exactly why I got my French one.
So, like, you know, exact same record, you know, the one I'd probably buy at a store would probably be a lot more fucked up than this one. But I don't know. Mm-hmm. There's something about it where it's just like it's way too much of a product. So
it's dressed up.
Yeah. So is there anything on this list that you guys really like and want, do you think? Because like I got one that really super interests me. I'll come back to it, though.
Yeah, I got there's only two things I want. I'm kind of glad because kind of didn't want to blow a whole lot of money record store this year. I want the New Barbarians 10-inch record, which, in case you don't know, the New Barbarians is Keith Richards and Ronnie Wood and a couple of the other Rolling Stone backup players. They toured in the 70s. And so it's a couple of their live tracks, which will be cool. And I really do want that Sublime 12-inch record, which I'm excited about.
So, like I said, I would like the Ramones 7-inch. It's not my number one, but I would like that. I think that would be cool to have. The Sonics have a live LP coming
out. That's cool.
Which I think I will take a look at. That's also, but also I do want the Direct Hit Broke Down Split 7-inch from Red Scare. And then I found a discrepancy here. I also want the NoFX Sid and Nancy 7-inch, but it's saying 750 copies on this list, but on the Fat Records announcement video with Fat Mike, he says that there are 3,000 being pressed, which I would believe.
There's maybe like a limited color run that they're using for Record Store Day, but then otherwise you could just go buy it.
Yeah, probably. So yeah, those are my four. And then I wanted to bring something up about this list is these fucking comps. I mean, there's like a whole like 10, 12, 15, like various artists section on the list, and I'm just wondering who buys
those are actually kind of a thing. Guys that buy that are guys that were really into record collecting in like this late 70s and early 80s, kind of your college rock type guy, and they buy those records because they feel as though it's sort of an intro course or a worldly course, or actually the reason they buy it is because it's been curated by someone they feel has taste, or an entity that they feel has taste. So by getting it, it will enable them to appreciate music outside of the normal areas upon which they listen to music, and also kind of make them look cool just by owning it. Those are the guys that buy it. Basically, guys that love the record store, that worked in the record store or hung out in the record store and the college radio station in the 80s that are now like 50 or 45. That's who buys that.
Okay.
So the one that I that really caught my attention, and I was completely ignoring kind of Records Are Dead until I saw this, and I was like, that one I kind of want, is so Mets out of Toronto. We played them on the show a bunch. They got together with Mission of Burma to do a split 7-inch, where basically Mission of Burma is covering a Mets song and Mets is covering a Mission of Burma song. And you know, it's going to be, I don't know, what is it? What is the fancy? It's a Starburst 7-inch, I guess. So, but anyways, like that to me is something that was kind of cool to pick up, because I'm pretty sure that neither of those bands has a use for that song outside of that. I hope. Like, I don't want to go grab some 7-inch if, like, that song is going to end up on the next Mets LP. But, and this is probably not going to be the case in this one. So, you know, I could do that. Mets Mission of Burma. That's what, see, I want.
That's what I like about, like, wacky releases that probably couldn't exist otherwise. That's what I like about Record Store Day. And I feel they didn't do a whole lot of that this year.
A couple other, I mean, just two other things about the list. One, usually, I'm kind of disappointed about this. Usually Off put something out on Record Store Day.
Yeah, true.
Nothing this time. The last 2 years, like in a row, they definitely have. I thought it was weird that there are like two Hello Kitty releases. One's on Burger Records, but still, I don't know why that's a thing.
Hello Kitty, what do you mean?
Like the South Korean cartoon.
I mean, what's the record?
Cat. It's Hello Kitty. One is called Hello World. And then Hello Kitty on Ice, which is the one from Burger Records. I didn't get that at all. but yeah, I got, you know, those, this is typical for me. I usually only have like 3 to 4 things I really want. And then everything else is, to me, is just kind of not worth it at all.
Interesting. Well,
Ricky, it's Hello Kitty on Ice.
Is that different? I don't know.
Oh, but you're right. There is one called Hello Kitty. So maybe it is Hello Kitty. I don't know. I'm a big fan of Burger.
Are you implying that like there's like a grindcore band called Hello Kitty on Ice?
I'm saying there almost definitely is a grindcore band called Hello Kitty on Ice. Even if I don't know about it, but I'm sure there's a band. No, actually, there's not. Oh, wait. No. Wait, I'll tell you in 2 seconds. Yes, there is a band called Hello Kitty on Ice, and they were a obscure punk band from 1991.
Oh, okay. Then I take that one back. But still, the other one is weird.
So the other one is like the
like Hello Kitty.
Like
Hello
the other Kitty. One, it does appear to be I Hello Kitty. So.
That's
and
odd.
Also, yeah.
And all right. Judging by this cassette tape compilation that they were on, it does appear that they are a grindcore band. But I the other bands on the comp are the Deviants, Angel of Thorns, Negative Land. So pretty far out bands. So I'm assuming they are a grindcore band, or at least a pretty extreme band.
I am so happy that I was able to predict that. So we're gonna get off Record Store Day here. I'm gonna play a song, and then we're gonna come back. We have a ton of stories that we can talk about this week. This is a band that was they were originally from Victoria, BC. I think they co-locate to Montreal these days, but it is a band called Babysitter. The song is called Exploding Youth. It was released on the band's second LP, a self-titled one that came out on Psychic Handshake Recordings last September. If you like, we talked about College Rock a second ago, but if you like some of this kind of like grungy slacker stuff, Pavement, Archer's the Loaf, The Wipers, you'll like this. It's really cool. So this is Exploding Youth by Babysitter.
I'll follow.
We're back. John, talk about Ron.
Okay, well, listen, man, this is not a tragic story, but it's not a happy story either. Ron Reyes, who, as you know, was the second singer for Black Flag, who rejoined Black Flag, I think it was 2013 by now, about 2013, who released a record with Black Flag that was, well, got pretty bad reviews, who also was in a band called Piggy. He was also in another band called Crash Bang Crunch Pop and has been in a whole bunch of bands. He's basically decided that he's going to stop doing music. And basically, he's in his band called Piggy, and he said, Piggy's over, and he says, I am retiring from live music and crawling back under my rock. About 5.5 years ago, Doug Smith coaxed me out from early retirement, and that led to five bands with the best band and best bunch of people. And he doesn't really mention the Black Flag. But that's not really what I wanted to talk about the story. A, it's sad that Ron Reyes is not doing music anymore. Maybe he'll be back. Ron Reyes is a fantastic singer, a fantastic frontman. And I really was disappointed by how so many people in the punk rock scene like spoke dismissively of Ron Reyes. I mean, Jealous Again is one of the greatest EPs of all time. And people are like, well, all they did was Jealous Again. Well, what have you done? I mean, it's like, oh, I only recorded one of the greatest punk rock EPs ever. You know, it's like, but on top of that is, so I wrote the story up because I called him punk rock legend Ron Reyes, because I wanted to send Ron Reyes off into the sunset, if you will, at least from at Punk News. Well, I feel really bad about this. Ron Reyes, about a week later, he must have saw this news, this post, and on his Facebook, he basically went off on this diatribe about how he never wanted to call himself a legend, how he doesn't see himself as a legend, and that's why he put things on Facebook, is he wanted to stay away from, quote, Black Flag fanboys. And then he's kind of like started talking about how rejoining Black Flag was the biggest mistake of his life, and he's going to regret it for the rest of his life. And he was going on about how he was really like hurt by comments people were making, you know. And I don't know if he was taking a shot at me personally or at Punk News, or maybe he didn't even mean Punk News. Maybe he meant just some of the commenters. And so there's a lot of questions here. And I do feel as though people were unfairly vicious towards Ron Reyes. I think the reason people were unfairly vicious toward Ron Reyes is it shows kind of the ugly side of humanity, in that when people are unhappy with their own life or whatever, they will throw rocks at someone else if that person can't strike back in order to make them feel better. So a lot of the criticism aimed at Ron Reyes wasn't even because people didn't like Ron Reyes. It's because they had negative energy in their life and they wanted to exert that on someone that they could strike at without fear of being hurt themselves. So it's quite cowardly and quite hateful. And I think that's what a lot of the criticism on Ron Reyes was. And let's be frank, the last Black Flag record wasn't great, but it wasn't terrible. And let's be frank, Ron Reyes is an amazing singer and an amazing front man. And so, two main things here is, A, is there a line between criticism and just being angry and hateful? And if an artist starts to really react negatively from that, which I think Ron Reyes kind of, like, it really did seem to hurt him, like, maybe you should draw back on the criticism, or is the rule you can say whatever you want even if it is really doing someone harm? Second question is, did I act poorly by reading his Facebook and posting his Facebook quote?
Second question, no.
I feel bad about it. I mean, I was trying to...
You feel bad that you exposed him to dicks.
I honestly was trying to pay tribute to him because I'm a huge fan. Like, this article was entirely respectful, right?
Shit, you called him legendary. I mean, his problem
he might have
with
been just he might have just been being humble. Just saying.
Well, I mean, the statement itself was muddled, so I'm reticent to draw one meaning from it, you know. But it didn't say, "Hey, thanks, Punk News. I really appreciate the platitudes," you know.
Well, no, but I mean, like, you know, he may have silently appreciated the platitudes if people weren't going to rake him over the coals, yeah. Right? I think that he was more smart from that. I mean, I think that these days, and this is maybe me being an old person now, I would be so hesitant, even about, like, artists that I like, from deciding that one of the things that I needed to do, or not artists that I like, but even artists that are too big to probably give a shit, I'd be really hesitant about, you know, using the internet as a platform to go tear them down, especially if I have something better I could be doing. If only because with, you know, social media and everything else, everything's interconnected. And even people that are, you know, quote unquote stars, they're they're reading this shit that's being said about them just as much as, you know, people who are just normal Joes are. And if you look at someone who's like Ron, you know, he's not a giant rock star. Yeah, he was in a legendary band, but, you know, he's certainly not like, you know, riding around in a golden chariot full of cash with a bunch of sycophants in it, right? Like
he works in a flag shop.
Like, yeah, he's a dude, right? So the fact that, you know, if he's talked about, there's a good chance he's going to read it. So what do you accomplish, even if he was not your particular favorite Black Flag singer or whatever, or even if you took issue with John's flippant use of the word legendary, say, why bother? Like why bother making a, like, throwing shit about it? Because the chances are the dude's going to see it. And I mean, that even happens. Like, you hear about that all the time where, like, where, you know, the people that are actual celebrities that, like, don't need to be reacting to all the crazy shit that's said about them on the internet. They actually still tune into the crazy shit that's said about them on the internet. So you'd have to expect that someone who is legitimately just a working dude who, you know, outside of that is just, you know, the same of the same stature as everyone else, you know, trying to get by, that he wouldn't see it. Like, I don't understand how people don't have that filter. Like, I don't understand why that doesn't click in. And I feel like there's like a pretty short list of people that I would go and like really publicly try to take apart without, you know, worrying that I'm going to somehow wound them. I guess I go talk shit on like Justin Bieber or something. And he's probably not going to care. Not that I want the ire of his followers, but you know, if it's this, some mid-level band, like there's one thing about like giving something a bad review from a musical standpoint. There's another thing about just like shitting on a guy. Like, don't do that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, in terms of your first question, John, you know, when someone puts their art out there, it's going to be critiqued either positively or negatively. But I think once like the ad hominem start coming in, like that's a problem. I mean, they're allowed to do it. It's just a shitty thing to do. I mean, the fact is he was in a legendary band. And so I think that label was appropriate. In terms of the story itself, I'm kind of pissed that this is happening because I had the chance to see Piggy like twice and
you should have went, man.
I should have went and I feel like an asshole for it. Hopefully he'll come back. Hopefully, I mean, this didn't sound super like I'm committal, like that he was completely done with music. So maybe he'll come back. I mean, does he live out here?
Or he lives in Canada.
That's what I thought. Okay. He was doing like two different LA shows or Southern California shows that I could have gone to either. And I didn't go and I'm pissed about it. But, seriously, I don't understand who like the people that take the time to take shots at people when they've probably done less with their lives than what this guy did in his youth. Yeah, I
mean, listen to
combined.
This is what someone wrote on the Punk News website. Dude sang on maybe 10 Black Flag tunes, writing a grand total of none of them. Well, what'd you do? You know what I mean? Like he took Jealous Again and knocked it out of the park. Not everybody could have done what he did on Jealous Again. And what did this guy do? You know what I mean? It's like who are you to have such a righteous indignation towards someone that has some great records and some not great records? You know, I just don't understand. And like I said, I really just think it's unhappy people trying to vent their unhappiness on someone that can't fight back. I could be wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Now, one other thing I do disagree with, I thought that last Black Flag album was not good.
Well, I thought it was, I actually thought it was good in parts. Honestly, I think the best part of that record was Ron Reyes. I think the record could have been a great record, but.
I remember that story broke out when like they released like the details of it. I remember being so disgusted and just thrown off at that. Just the album art alone was so bad, and the album title,
Ron Reyes did the album art.
Well, again, I can critique the art, but am I gonna go after him? No. In a personal way, no. Ron, you got my legendary status. Like, I get that because I know you're listening, but Yeah, that I just wasn't a fan of the last album, but you have my utmost respect if indeed
he's done a lot of amazing things. So much, but love towards Ron Reyes from Punk News. Nothing but love. Adam White, we got another twist with another famous early punk rock founder, don't we?
Yeah, and this one is way worse because this is not just a retirement here. So I'm actually going to just jump right into the, I think the first paragraph of the, statement here. So this is a statement from Lori Hudson. So Lori is,
his wife
of HR of Bad Brains. So, here you go. He says, I am HR's caregiver. He has a neurobiological disorder and has had severe headaches for years. The headaches have gotten progressively worse. In November, he began living with almost constant pain. He has been diagnosed with a rare type of headache called SUNCT, like S-U-N-C-T.
Trigeminal neurologia?
Sure. Anyways, that is similar to cluster headaches. There is no known cure and no reliable medical treatment. To give you an idea of what he's dealing with, cluster headaches are nicknamed suicide syndrome. The headaches come randomly with no warning at all hours of the day and night, but for him, they are much worse at night. The intensity of the nighttime headaches is so great that he yells, cries out, groans, and sobs repeatedly every few minutes for most of the night. He can't work, he has no quality of life, and if you call him and ask him how he is, he'll say, everything's okay, because that's just how he is, but everything is not okay. So there's a full statement here. She talks about all the consultations that they've had with doctors, the various pharmaceuticals that he's been on. A little bit about Lori's life. How basically she's a full time caregiver as well as, you know, having a day job. Talking about the state that poor HR is in right now. So this is, John, I think you're a little bit more tuned into kind of like what's been going on recently with like the Bad Brains camp than I am. Like, was this known?
This was not known. Of course, as you know, Dr. No of the Bad Brains also had a very serious medical issue about what, 2 months ago now. He's recovering, but he's still far from better. With the Bad Brain camp, this was not public. This is the first of this knowledge has become public just last night. HR was doing live shows up until a year ago. I saw him twice last year doing solo shows, and they were pretty good. So this is brand new news, and I hate to be a negative Nancy, but there's another thing. This is another thing that the audience, this is a minority of the punk news the punk rock audience, really, really bummed me out on this. Is this is a guy that's got a severe medical issue. This sounds bad, you know. And so some people were like, HR's got a neurobiological disorder. That's a strange name for homophobia. And it's like, yes, HR wrote a song that can be interpreted as not liking gay people. And that's lame. It's lame to hate gay people. That's bad. However, HR's never done anything violent to anyone. He's never assaulted anyone. He's never, you know, called violence against anyone. Does he have a bad opinion about that topic? Yes. But is that a good reason to laugh at someone's very serious medical issue? I mean, I would never do that because, A, that's bad mojo. Like, I'm superstitious that way. Like, I would never wish medical issues on anybody because I think it's bad mojo. But even if I wasn't superstitious, like, that just seems so... So crass, so boneheaded, so vicious, and so hateful to me. I want to expand on that a little bit, but I fear I might be talking too much. I just feel that it was incredibly poor taste to ever wish or laugh at someone's severe medical issue for the mere fact that they have a difference of political opinion than you. It seems very hateful, very non-caring, and really, it seemed to me that the point of punk rock and what a lot of people say that politics is about is doing right by your common man. Well, I don't think relishing in someone's severe medical issue is in any way punk rock or doing right by the common man or caring for other people.
Yeah, you know, you would think people would take it a little more, something like this a little more seriously, especially since it's nicknamed suicide syndrome. That's dark. That's a scary nickname for something like this. So yeah, just it's just not who. What do you accomplish by doing that?
And being a sick person. That's sick.
It's just not. It's just in terrible taste. That's it. It sucks this guy has it. I unfortunately have never been able to see him perform, and I've wanted to for a while. So,
As we talk about critique, when he does reggae now, it's okay. It's not great. When he does the Bad Brains, it's not that great. He used to be a legend, but not so much anymore. I mean, musically, he used to be the greatest, not so much anymore. But when I was in grade school, like, I feel as though there's a breaking down of care for one's fellow human beings. I remember when I was in grade school, it was a huge no-no. You should never make fun of people with developmental issues, you know? And now, like, on TV, thanks to Family Guy and stuff like that, they do that all the time. And now, like, it seems as though it's okay to wish, like, medical issues on people, and it's okay to, like, beat people up if you disagree with their point of view, no matter how odious their point of view is. I feel as though there's a real breakdown of caring for one's fellow man and a real breakdown of critical thinking. I don't know, Adam, why am I being too heavy about this?
No, I mean, I don't know what's the cause of it. I mean, I would love to blame Family Guy because, like, fuck that. But, I still, it's the exact same story as the one that we had just done, where, like, I don't understand what anyone gains from taking someone's hardship and deciding that they're going to use that to be, like, a dick on the internet. Like, what, do you make a list of accomplishments when you go to bed at night and you're like, these are the following, like, just, like, horrible things that I've done today to people? Because I feel like our readers sometimes have a list and they're just checking off items.
Well, you know, I think if you bring up something like Family Guy, that's supposed to be funny and kind of poke fun. When you're just and not be super vicious, I mean, a lot of the stuff we've been going that we've seen being commented on so far is just just straight up spewing poison. Like, and so I think there's a distinct difference. Like, if you're just ragging on someone from anonymously on the internet, you're just, and without really any sort of caring for that person, it's kind of shitty. It's shitty. But when someone's just poking fun, trying to be funny, like Family Guy, South Park, God knows they do it. I mean, I think there's definitely a black and white difference there, even if you don't like those shows. But anyway, shall we go to the next story?
I guess we could be angry.
The most DIY band ever, AC/DC, have canceled the rest of their U.S.
Is that an
tour.
AC/DC diss, Ricky? Are you dissing AC/DC?
I would never diss AC/DC,
good,
John.
I'm
come
glad.
On.
Ricky, yeah. Don't worry. I have a way to loop this story back into punk rock.
All right. So, again, the most DIY band ever, AC/DC, have canceled the rest.
You know, they
started
out as DIY, Ricky. They self-released their first two records, you know.
And they still, don't they still? Anyway, apparently the cancellation was due to singer Brian Johnson's hearing problems. Doctors have warned him that if he continues to perform, he will risk total hearing loss. The band has stated an intention to resume the tour later on, likely with a guest vocalist. Like, who, though?
No one can blame. Well,
let's be honest. I like Thunderstruck and TNT as much as the next guy, but should these guys just stop?
Well, listen. No. AC/DC is one of the greatest rock and roll bands of all time. You ask me, they're probably the second greatest classic rock band. With Bon Scott, AC/DC was unstoppable. All those Bon Scott records are amazing. The Brian Johnson records are hit or miss. AC/DC certainly is a band that started out small and got bigger and bigger and bigger. Why? Because they rule. Should AC/DC hang it up now? The answer is, well actually, good question. And I'm not going to give a definite answer. The first answer is, should they give it up? The answer is yes, because honestly, they're not nearly as good as they used to be. I saw them in 2003. They were awesome. I heard in 2012 they were getting kind of bad. And so the only Angus Young is really the only guy left in the band because his brother has severe dementia. Brian Johnson's out of the band. However, should AC/DC give it up? No. If Angus Young sees it as his mission in life to play music. And AC/DC should not give it up. AC/DC should keep being AC/DC, even if it's just Angus Young. So I've got conflicting answers to that. However, actually, the Jim Brewer podcast, I'm a big fan of Jim Brewer. He's a comedian. He actually just stated that basically Brian Johnson feels stabbed in the back because he told the band that he has hearing issues, and the band said, okay. And then the next morning, Brian Johnson saw on the internet that he was being replaced with guest singers. So after being in the band for 36 years, they kind of just gave him the boot to the ass and said, get out, you know, don't let the door hit you on the way out. We don't need you anymore. And so he feels really upset by that, according to the Jim Brewer podcast. So that looks kind of bad for AC/DC. Well, Angus Young, really. So I wouldn't go see AC/DC. Well, I would go see AC/DC for a... Well, actually, I would not see AC/DC with a different singer than Brian Johnson. I would go Brian Johnson, $40, maybe $50, but no more than that. So that's my long-winded answer. Adam White.
So there was a... speaking of AC/DC singers, I'm pretty sure that the first guy, Dave Evans, I believe his Indeed. Name was. So... correct me if I'm wrong, and maybe I'm thinking of the wrong guy, but did he have much of a career after that?
I don't think he did, Adam. No,
there is like a divey bar in like the super depressed downtown Niagara Falls that I drove by a few months ago, and there was a sign out front that was like AC/DC singer performing, and then like in like little letters under there was like Dave Evans, and I'm like, who is that?
Did you go?
I thought this. No.
Oh, man, I would have loved to see that. Dave Evans did the very first single with AC/DC, Rockin' in the Parlor, and it's a pretty cheesy tune. Bon Scott was their roadie. They fired Dave Evans, and Bon Scott joined the band, and the rest is history. I want to add quick, listen, kids, do not be too cool to wear earplugs to punk rock concerts. I used to not wear earplugs to punk concerts, and then I actually had a kind of a bad scare once. I saw the Melvins twice in 2 days. 2 days later, I saw the Dwarves. No, I'm sorry. 2 days later, I saw Ceremony, and then a day later, I saw the Dwarves. And for the Dwarves was the quietest show, but I had a real hearing scare for about 6 months. So after that, I always made sure to wear earplugs. And I find that, and I didn't wear earplugs for years because I thought it would act like you won't be able to hear the music. I find that when you wear earplugs, the earplugs actually filter out the different levels better, and it makes it sound better, and it does way less damage to your hearing. So, listen, kids, I always wear earplugs. That's my recommendation.
I agree. I wear them every show I've gone to, because I hate that ringing you get like the next day.
Oh, you're making me feel bad because I've never done that, but I understand that medically.
Adam, what you really should. I'm not trying to be a grandpa.
For the cool kids, if you can mosh and wear earplugs, they won't fall out if you do it.
Adam,
right,
you should just do it once and see how you like it. I mean, seriously, you should.
I'm not against it. It's more just like a, by the time I think about that, I'm like in the car.
You can buy a huge sack of earplugs for like $6 and you have earplugs for a year.
Yeah.
However,
just throw them in the car.
Rounding this AC/DC story back to the Punk News podcast. Do you know John Gentile, who has put themselves forward as the new singer to AC/DC?
Morrissey. No, let me guess. Who has put themselves? And someone from the punk rock scene.
Someone from the punk rock scene.
I'm going to guess. This is just a guess. The Dropkick Murphys' first singer, Al Barr.
No.
Who? What?
Dexter Holland.
No, no, God, Dexter Holland. No, Dexter Holland. That would be horrible. No, Howlin' Pelle Alfquist from the Hives, or however you pronounce his name.
That could work.
Well, they've opened for AC/DC before, actually, but I don't know if he was just being cheeky about it, but he popped onto Facebook afterwards, and he said that, where is it here? Here's his quote. This is his job application. He says, I have many, many years of experience touring in the world's biggest stages, and according to others, I am the greatest frontman in rock. Plus, judging from the reaction in Australia, your crowd already seems to really like me. Plus, I have been singing these songs since I was 6 years old. So that is the typically, humble statement that that Howlin' Pelle from the Hives has put forward. So there you go.
They're like Swedish, right? The Hives?
Yeah, they're Swedish. Yeah.
Are they known as humble people?
No.
Oh, they're not.
It's
not
like it's shtick that they're not.
Oh, it is. Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, I mean, he said in a statement that people consider him the greatest frontman.
Like, that sounds like comedy to me, but it sounds like he's actually being serious.
It is a really
open question.
Well committed to bit, in my mind. I mean, maybe they think that. I get a sense that like a lot the Hive stuff to me is a lot like an Andrew WK thing sometimes, where just like there's the mix between sincerity and is this a bit, you know. Completely meld. So there you go. Have right. Pelle sing for AC/DC. Ricky,
I got a song.
Yeah.
So just quick backstory. I saw, like I said when we were talking about records, I saw Murderland, their local like horror pop punk band. I saw their record release show. It was a Bad Cop and a band called the Shell Corporation. They're out of Burbank. We've covered them on Punk News before, but these guys fucking killed it at this show. They were so good, and this was my second time seeing them. It had been almost over a year since the first time I saw them, and I was very excited to see them perform again. So they said that they are working on a new full length. I think they have an EP they're working on too. But damn, these guys! If you can see these guys, they are so good. And they deserve to have more to be talked about a lot more than they have been, but they've been a little quiet, I think, lately. Anyway, I'm playing a song called Ozymandias off their first album called Force Majeure. Super political. There's a great bridge build-up thing where they actually incorporated the classic speech from this movie, a movie called Network, which is surprisingly accurate for to now, actually. So I highly recommend the film. And again, so here is Ozymandias off Force Majeure by the Shell Corporation. I met your trouble from an antique lad. You said too fast and truckless legs of stone. Sand in the desert. Near them on the sand that sunk a shattered visage lies. Whose brown and red gold lip and stare of cold command. Nothing but song.
Now, I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as bad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore.
Nothing beside remains of the decay of that colossal wreck.
Dan, I'm not a Republic serial villain. Do you seriously think I'd explain my master stroke if there remained the slightest chance of you affecting its outcome? I did it 35 minutes ago.
Very good, very good. Do you have that committed to memory?
No, I have Google image search. Oh. So, anyways, we're going to keep going here and talk about some of the other stuff that happened this past week. John, Tegan and Sarah.
Tegan and Sarah are putting out a new album. They've announced a new album. The new album will be called Tegan and Sarah, Love You to Death. And I'm excited. The last Tegan and Sarah album was where they almost abandoned rock entirely, and it was almost a pop album. For some reason, Tegan and Sarah have always been embraced by the punk community for one reason or another. I thought their last album was fantastic. I'm excited for this. I think this new album is probably going to be another Tegan and Sarah do pop. I think it'll probably be more melancholy than the last one. The last one was actually kind of melancholy, too. I'm excited. Tegan and Sarah are great. What else can you say? It's been 3 years since their last album, which it seems like it's only been a year, but it's been 3 years. I'm excited. This will be cool. Ricky Franco, one of your and one of my favorite bands, has just released a new track. What's it called? How's it sounding?
Okay, so Morning Glory have released... Well, we got to stream the... first track for, well, one of the first track made available.
Baby.
It is the first track. Okay. Called from Morning Glory's post-war psalms called Clean the World. I am in the midst of reviewing this EP and it fucking rules. Ezra Kyer can do no wrong. So again, Clean the World is off the band's upcoming EP, Post-War Psalms, and truly the EP title is no lie. The tunes follow in the same style from its parent release, War Songs. As always, Morning Glory goes big and they go bold, which they definitely do. Clean the Streets focuses on the ever-present problem of wealth divide. Yet, the song's clacking guitar, it feels like a roller coaster car, which is true, getting cranked up to the big loop until those famed bellowing melodies, including from frontman Ezra Kyer's soaring voice, curl the whole thing towards the inevitable drop. That describes it quite the whole thing quite well. I mean, it is the piano infused into like the typical like the chugging guitars and just so good. This was hands down one of my most anticipated releases of the year, and I am blown away by it. It's also coming off Buyback Records and Ryan Young's Anxious and Angry. This is one of the few very rare times where I've actually pre-ordered both variants of the record on vinyl because I love this band so much. Guys, what did you think?
I thought it was cool, man. I thought it was real cool. It sounds very much like War Psalms sounded, so I'm excited for this record. I think the record's going to be cool. What I love about Morning Glory, unlike a lot of other bands, is they go very bold. They try very hard, but they pull it off. They're very daring. So I'm excited for this record. Adam White, should we talk about a famous act of flame war, if you will?
You know what? I was thinking that we should, but I kind of want to talk about this for a little while, and this is a long show, so let's hit this one next week. There's some wacky Sex Pistols shit going on, so we'll come back to that.
Let's tease it and ask the writers to write in their own opinion, and we'll address it.
Yeah, because, all right, you know what? I'll tease it because I kind of want to look up a little bit more about what this dude's actually trying to protest here. So there's a guy named Joe Corey. He is the son of infamous Sex Pistols manager Malcolm McLaren and English fashion designer Vivian Westwood. He has decided that in protest of a movement called Punk London that the Queen herself is supporting, he is going to be burning an estimated £5 million, that is UK currency, not weight, worth of punk memorabilia from his inherited personal collection, because, you know, anarchy. So so he's gonna do this thing to, I don't know, protest, I guess, the establishment embracing punk rock as a historic thing. You can find the story about this on Punk News. I really want to look up what this Punk London thing is, because I don't really know much about it. So we should talk about that next week, and we'll circle back to this and discuss really if burning a giant pile of historic memorabilia is really a good idea to really a good way to protest something. And what I really like to talk about next week is whether this dude who's just inherited this shit really has the right to say anything. So we'll come back to
write us at podcast@punknews.org. Speaking of another band that's protesting things, Napalm Death, they've just released a video for their song Dear Slum Landlord. Listen, people, the song is off their latest album called Apex Predator Easy Meat. If you want to check out some extreme music, if you want to check out grindcore, this is not strict grindcore, but it's grindcore influenced, even though Napalm Death invented grindcore. If you want to check out some extreme heavy metal, check out this album, Napalm Death, Apex Predator, Easy Meat. It's the band is in the middle of a 10-year upswing. It is everything that I love about extreme heavy metal. I don't listen to a whole lot of extreme metal, but if you want some nasty, awesome, short, intelligent songs, check out this record. The video is cool. It's a flash video. So, you know, flash videos to me kind of are like chewing gum. They always end up feeling kind of empty. Like, oh, they just threw some images together and made a video out of it. So the video is not great, but check out the album. Let's wrap up tonight's podcast. Ricky, tell us about one of your favorite bands or favorite newer bands.
I mean, these guys for me have, the more I listen to these guys, the more I'm really, really liking them. So Mean Jeans, we're streaming their new EP Night Vision over at Brooklyn Vegan, which comes out Friday, March 18th. As I said earlier, my copy came early, and the EP is quite good, especially the title track Night Vision. So the EP came out on Fat Records. The band will be releasing their full length on Fat as well, called Tight New Dimension, which I will be pre-ordering, hopefully. And then that will be coming out on April 22nd. And you can find the links to the EP stream on the Punk News article. These guys are really impressing me every time. And I was originally kind of, I kind of questioned why the Fat decided to take him, but now I get it, and they have my support.
It's quite logical for Fat to take them, particularly with the loss of Teenage Bottle Rocket leaving the label. Adam, what do you agree?
Yeah, I think it's definitely within the modern day kind of like Fat bent of kind of signing these kind of like garagey bands that you would have, I mean, hell, signing bands that you probably would have heard on Dirt Nap, right?
Well, exactly. But what made it, and I only thought that for like a little bit, but then I realized like Guitar.
Why did you think it though? I'm just curious.
I think it's just because of the bands that I choose to listen to from that label are typically, you know, Leftover Crack, Morning Glory, now Pears. I guess this kind of goes to the more Ramones-ish garage category, which I have been slowly creeping into and enjoying a lot. But my mind has been completely changed. If anything, I agree with you guys.
Adam, what if Fat releases the next Spitz Records? That is now within the realm of possibility.
You know what? I mean, like if Fat ever, like if Mike and Aaron at some point decide that they don't want to run that label anymore, and they just want to like wash their hands of it, that and they want to go like live as paupers somewhere, they should get all their money and resources and give it to Dirt Nap, and then Dirt Nap can just like have more money to release cool shit. So I'd like Dirt Nap. That's what I'm trying to say. Dirt Nap is a great fucking label. Anyways,
it is.
Keep going.
Well, that about wraps up tonight's podcast. I'll play a tune and then Adam White can close this out. Have I played Max Levine Ensemble on the podcast yet? I can't remember.
We've talked about them, but I don't know if you've played.
Well, you know what?
I don't believe
I'm becoming more and more a fan of Max Levine Ensemble. Somebody said to me, John, why is that your favorite band? Max Levine Ensemble is not my favorite band, but I'm becoming more and more of a big fan of this band. They just released a new album. It's called Backlash, baby. And one of my very, very favorite songs, or actually my favorite song by them on it, is called Shadow of Death. And to me, it sounds like a Gang of Four does ska singing about death. And I saw Max Levine Ensemble this past Saturday live in Philadelphia. They were amazing. If you want to talk about a band that represents all the best part of DC punk without any of the annoying parts of DC punk, check out Max Levine Ensemble. This is Shadow of Death off the new album Backlash Baby by Max Levine Ensemble.
Wraps up this week's Punk News podcast. If anyone wants to get in touch with us, you can email us at podcast@punknews.org. And that's all. You know, have a good middle of March, people. We'll see you later.